I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to Dwell, a Searcy Institute podcast for homeschool moms by homeschool moms. And my name is Karen Kern, and I'm here today with my co-host, Renee Mathis. Hi, Renee.
Hey, Karen. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And today we have another special guest, which Renee will introduce in a moment. But before we do that, I just want to remind you all to sign up for our Dwell 2024 our online conference, which will be on Wednesday afternoons for the month of April. We have four speakers, four afternoons from 3 to 4:30. You can sign up on the Searcy website. And our speakers will be Renee Mathis and Heather Shirley and Heidi White and Andrea Lipinski. And our theme is from Psalm 90 about our homes flourishing. What is the exact word, Renee?
Establish the work of our hands?
Establish the work of our hands, yes. I chose the psalm. Couldn't remember the last line there for a second. So we're going to be talking about and dwelling on and thinking about how the works of our hands are established by the Lord in our homes and how the beauty of the Lord dwells in our homes. And so please join us, sign up and pay what you can. And we'd love to have as many of you as possible with us. Thanks. So Renee, take it away.
Well, we have a very special guest today with us, and he might be familiar to some of y'all who have been around Searcy for a while. He is our resident Shakespeare expert. I should say one of them. There's probably more than one, but he's our go-to guy. When we said we want someone to talk about Shakespeare, we said, let's get Tim on here. So I'd like to introduce y'all, in case you don't know him, to Tim McIntosh. Tim is a, I think, native of Atlanta, and you're back in the Atlanta area now with your wife, Gaylin, and sweet little daughter, Arden.
That's right.
You used to work for Gutenberg College, but now you're back in the South working for Westfall Gold as their creative director. And since I don't know what Westfall Gold is, I will let you tell our, our listeners what you do.
We are hired by large charities to put on fundraising weekends. So I'm the person who listens to the charity, the nonprofit, and I kind of distill what their main message to their donors is. And so I help design the speeches, the graphics package, the video package that we make for our clients. And I just want to say, you guys know I'm a big fan of the classical Christian education renewal. And it's starting to be large enough that I'm looking for that client that is going to be our first client in the kind of Christian classical world. I'm really invested there. So I can't wait for that time when, my professional duties and my kind of, side hustle passion can meet. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Oh, the world is waiting for that. Sounds wonderful.
There's a great need for that.
I think so.
Well, how did you first become a fan of Shakespeare? Do you have a teaching background with Shakespeare? I know you have directed and performed in Shakespeare's plays.
Yeah.
A little bit about Tim and the Bard.
So I felt like I think a lot of people felt. I respected Shakespeare because everyone spoke glowingly of Shakespeare, but I didn't really love Shakespeare until I was asked to perform a scene of Shakespeare's on a stage in front of real life human beings. And so I had done just a little bit of theater acting, and one of my fellow actors had been cast in a scene, and she said, "Hey, there's a male part. I would love for you to go out for it." And I said, "Sure." This is when I was living in Eugene, Oregon. And there was a woman named Sparky Roberts who taught at Lane Community College. And every year she would put on what she called a Shakespeare showcase. And it was just a collection of 12 to 20 scenes. And she cast me in a scene from Measure for Measure with my fellow actor, Mary. And I was forced to memorize the words and to act them. And it was actually in the process of doing that, that I fell in love with Shakespeare. I had read Shakespeare. I had taught Shakespeare. I had seen movies. I had seen, you know, live performances. And I liked it, but it wasn't until I actually had to enact the words myself that changed everything for me. And that was kind of relatively late in my life. I think I was probably almost 40 when I did that. And so, yeah, I just kind of set my hair on fire, and I haven't really slowed down since.
So you were already acting at that point, right? Like doing other things. Of course you were. You were in that movie.
That's right. that movie. Yeah, I was cast by a friend in these remakes of these books, these kids' books called the Sugar Creek Gang series. And my friend bought the rights to 5 of the books. And it's funny, Karen, that you bring this up, because totally my dad was a... What's that?
I just forgot about it till right now when I said
I've deliberately forgotten about it, Karen, but you brought it back up. My dad died 3 years ago, but he was a pastor his whole life. And I was home in Atlanta. I went to church to visit my dad. And my friend, Joy, was hosting auditions just by pure coincidence. She was hosting auditions at our church for this movie that she had bought the rights for. And so I said, "Hey, Joy, how you doing?" She's like, "Great." She's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm here to visit my dad." And she said, "You want to come audition for a role?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And I was like, no acting background whatsoever. And she put me in front of a camera and gave me, you know, some lines to say. And I was like, "This is fun. I got nothing to lose." And then she cast me. So that was kind of the beginning of my acting life. And then I went to do some stage work, and then I kind of migrated into Shakespeare. Now I almost feel like I don't want to really do anything but Shakespeare. But
we want to know, where can we watch these movies?
I don't know that you want to, Renee. They're somewhere out there online for purchase. I'm sure, like the Sugar Creek Gang.
If you Google Sugar Creek Gang movie Tim McIntosh,
you will find it.
Surely you'll find something. Yeah,
it was at one of the summer events at Blowing Rock, right? And somebody had just seen it,
and with their kids.
Yes, yeah. And then I can't remember the whole connection now, but it was hilarious.
Okay. I've had people stop me at Starbucks and say, "Hey, were you in the Sugar Creek Gang movies?" And I was like, "Yeah, actually was." Kind of funny.
Oh, so funny.
Okay, so from Sugar Creek to Shakespeare.
Yeah. Nice. That's right.
What's your favorite play?
I kind of move between 3. You can probably guess one of them,
Hamlet.
Karen, because
Hamlet.
Yeah. And I was Hamlet. I got to perform Hamlet. I also love King Lear. I really, really love King Lear. And my third favorite, kind of depends on what day it is, my third favorite is a play that hardly anybody even knows from Shakespeare. It's called Coriolanus. It's about a Roman general who gets ousted. He's like the greatest warrior in Rome at the time, but he's so incredibly pompous that he gets ousted from Rome. And then he decides, cool, I'll just march on Rome. Like, you want to throw me out? Great. I'm going to conquer you. It's a wonderful play. It's hard. It's rarely performed. I think it's the hardest language of any of his plays, which is saying something. The language is like the first obstacle to Shakespeare. But if you can find the 80s BBC version of Coriolanus, it's really special. It's got a couple moments in there with kids that are probably not, they're probably not ready for it, but for adults, it's wonderful.
Well, that brings up a good question. So, you know, our audience is homeschool moms, and
yeah,
you know, if I'm a homeschool mom who's not sure about where to start with Shakespeare, what advice do you have for me? I mean, should I try to go find videos and just watch movies? And is that the entry point? Or do we find a graphic novel version or an easy version of Shakespeare? Or do we just plunge right in with the real thing?
I have a few thoughts about this, Renee. And you two are the experts on this. Galen and I have a one-year-old, and I have high hopes for Arden falling in love with Shakespeare, but she's not quite there yet. So for me, the love of Shakespeare probably would flow through the parent first. So I might think, like, maybe your first job, if you want your kids to really love Shakespeare, is like, you got to fall in love with Shakespeare yourself. And I think I find it very, very difficult to read Shakespeare. Very difficult. I mean, and I've read a lot, and I've acted in a lot, and I've podcasted all of Shakespeare's plays, and I still find it difficult to just sit down on the couch, open up the big collected works, and read Shakespeare. Some people find it easy. I'm not one of those guys. So I would watch movies, because for me, the actor, a good actor, is kind of translating Shakespeare to our ears. We're 400 years distant from the writing of Shakespeare. A lot of the old language, the old sentence construction, the old grammar, it just bounces off our ear. But a really good actor can make a lot of sense of a very difficult text. And I'll give you an example. There's a version of Hamlet that was done, oh gosh, maybe 7 years ago by Andrew Scott. He's an Irish actor. He's probably mid-40s. And it's the most plain-spoken, direct Hamlet that I've ever seen. And it might be my favorite performance of Hamlet, because he just helps you understand what Hamlet is saying. And it's suddenly Shakespeare, Hamlet, becomes really, really accessible thanks to this wonderful actor. So I mean, if you want to read Shakespeare, I'm not going to say don't do it, but I don't think it's cheating to see a performance. A really good recorded performance is not cheating. I think that's the way it was supposed. That's the way we first encountered Shakespeare. We were in an audience with actors performing.
Okay, so let's play Stump Tim for a second. Can you rattle off a few of your favorites? For example, is there a Romeo and Juliet that you like?
Yeah, there's a. I'm gonna remember the director's name in a second. An Italian director who did
Zeffirelli.
Say it again, Zeffirelli. Thank you. I love that Romeo and Juliet. He's one of the first that cast them, kind of, as the age that they are in the actual play. So I think it was late 60s that he did Romeo and Juliet, and he cast two young people in the roles. And previous to that, the actors who were playing Romeo and Juliet were oftentimes in their 30s, even in their 40s, but he cast as like two 15-year-olds, and they were great actors.
Yeah.
And everybody since then has followed suit. Everybody's like, you know what? Romeo and Juliet were young. Let's cast them young. And I just think it's an elegant, simple recounting of Romeo and Juliet. And now I'm going to play the exact opposite card. I love the 90s version by Lars. Is it, why am I so struggling with the director's name? Lerman? Baz Luhrmann with, it's Claire Danes and
Leonardo DiCaprio.
I think it's fabulous. It's the exact opposite sorts of production as the Zeffirelli film. It's like big and loud and over the top and guns instead of swords. I seriously think it's a masterpiece.
Okay. What about Julius Caesar?
Julius Caesar was a live performance that I saw at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So you can't see it, but I'll just tell you the risk that they took and that it paid off incredibly. They cast Julius Caesar as a Latina woman who was about 5'2". And I remember seeing the poster of this woman who's going to be playing Julius Caesar. And I was like, there's no way. How can this work? And we went to go see it, and it was dynamite. It was incredible. It was incredible. You can't see that one. I like the Marlon Brando as Mark Antony version, black and white, probably 1950s, you think, Renee? Yeah. You seem familiar with it?
My favorite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You can tell I'm kind of a nerd for these productions.
How about Much Ado?
There's a version, black and white, made, I think.
That. The new
who's
one?
Who's the director?
I never know directors. I don't know, but it's that it's new and it's black and white. It's all set in one modern house.
Yep. And apparently they filmed it like in 2 days.
Mm-hmm. It's so great.
It's so great. It's so great.
So opposite from the Kenneth Branagh one, which is all color and amazing photography in a villa in Italy or wherever that was.
Yeah.
Where it's so opposite that I didn't think I'd like it. And I loved it.
It's so wonderful. Okay. So why did you like it, Karen, as opposed to the Kenneth Branagh version is good.
It was so
star-studded.
I think it was so simple.
Yeah.
And it made, because the background was so simple and the characters were, and it was black and white, it made the words do all the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think I'd like it. I loved it so much. So, And I guess the acting would have been really good because it was so believable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember who the actors are.
What I think is interesting is that oftentimes my favorite renderings of Shakespeare on film are oftentimes really, really simple. Like they pare everything back. And like you said, Karen, it was about the words. They let the words sing and they had actors that were good enough, well-trained enough to kind of let the words stand, and they didn't feel like they needed to dress the set and make the set compete with the words.
Yeah. But when our children were young, we watched the Kenneth Branagh one so, so, so many times.
Yeah.
And they loved it. And that was suitable to them because of all, you know, the humor and the clump, you know, the guys pretending to ride horses and they have the coconut.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And the photography is so beautiful. And the girl who plays Hero was so, all of that extravagance made it so fun for the kids to watch, even though they didn't understand the words.
Yeah.
They knew what was going on. So whereas children probably wouldn't have enjoyed the black and white one, because they would have thought.
Completely. So right.
They both have their place. And for us, I remember one time, David, all our kids were young, and we had just watched that movie for the 10th time or whatever. And in our backyard, we saw Katie swinging on the swing and David kicking up the water in the swimming pool.
Really?
Because they're playing that scene.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then they would take the chairs and they would try to, you know how Kenneth Branagh on that scene, he's trying to make the chair fold up or fold down. It was so fun to watch them take scenes that they knew so well that they could act them out.
Yeah.
And that's just from watching and rewatching as a family.
Can I tell you a story about kids falling in love with Shakespeare and acting out scenes? I was in an outdoor park performance of Macbeth, and I was playing Macbeth, and my friends Andrew and Marianne came to the performance, and at the time they brought their 3 kids, they now have 4. Their oldest was Soren. Soren came with a little wooden sword to the performance, and they sat down right in front of the place that I performed one of the big famous Macbeth scenes. It begins, Is that a dagger I see before me? The handle toward my hand. Come, let me clutch thee. It's Macbeth is having this vision of a dagger, and the dagger is leading him in to kill, to assassinate the king, Duncan. So the family sits down, you know, on a blanket. I go backstage, showtime. So we act out the play, and I come out for the monologue, the "Is this a dagger I see before me" monologue. So I'm out there, and I know that I'm kind of close to the family, but I'm not going to like look at them or anything because I'm performing and I'm being a professional. And so I'm kind of looking off toward the horizon, but I notice out of the corner of my eye, something is kind of moving upward from the ground, and I don't want to look at it. Like, is it a person? Is it a thing? And I'm doing the monologue. Is this a dagger I see before me? The handle toward my hand. Come, let me clutch thee. I have thee not, and yet I see thee still. And so I can see this thing kind of out of the corner of my eye, but I don't know what it is. I go on, I do the monologue, and then I go backstage, and all my castmates who are backstage are cracking up. They're laughing so hard. And I'm like, what are you guys laughing at? And they said, you didn't see it? And I said, I saw something out of the corner of my eye. I just didn't want to look at it. And they said, there was a kid with a wooden sword who heard, is this a dagger I see before me? And he thought that you were asking for his sword, and he was holding it up to you from the audience. Okay.
That's there's so
part.
Great.
It was so great. Here's part two of that story. Andrew and Marianne invited me over for dinner a couple weeks later, and they said, hey, be warned. Since going to Shakespeare, our boys now act out Shakespeare scenes in the backyard, Shakespeare scenes of their own contrivance in the backyard. Andrew has built a stage for them. Oh, they get up on top of the stage. Right. He was a carpenter, so he builds the stage. And they want to perform for you. And I was like, awesome. I am ready for it. So I go in the backyard. Andrew gives me a lawn chair. I sit down on the lawn chair. The boys get up on stage. And here's what Shakespeare was for them. One Soren jumps up on the stage. I am here to tack you with a sword. The sword is the reward of being not bored. And then Elliot gets up there and says some rhyming words that he made up himself, and then sword fight for about 20 minutes. And then he would stop and do some more made up rhymes. And then they took a bow. End of performance. That was Shakespeare for them. It was the best. It's like the best play I've ever been to in my life. It was great.
It's planting seeds, right? Like they have a taste for it.
Yes, that's
so
right.
That we grow with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. That's great.
My sister, forgive me, you guys, if I'm rambling on.
No, but, this is great.
Ramble away.
My sister and I were talking about these comic books that our parents kind of would leave in like certain high traffic areas in our house. They were classic comic books. Have you guys ever seen classic comic books? They're probably were made mostly in the 1950s and early 60s. They were illustrated, basically the equivalent of like a graphic novel today, but they did the entire text of Shakespeare with these really cool graphic renderings. And we would read them all the time, not really knowing what we were reading, you know, when we were 10, 11, 12, but we would just need something, want something to read. And so we would curl up with the classic comic book of Macbeth or the classic comic book of Hamlet. And Carissa said, my sister said something really interesting. She said, I think our parents were just really good at making Shakespeare and other really great literature just available and at hand in our house. And so when we got bored as kids, which all kids do, it was just kind of ready at hand and accessible. So that might have kind of whet my appetite in some way, just because these classic comic books were laying around.
Are those still available? Do you know?
I think they are. I think some version of them is still, they're out there on the internet somewhere. Mm.
I think one of the neat things about Shakespeare that I found when, you know, teaching it, like whether it was, you know, in my classroom experience with homeschoolers in a co-op, you know, or just reading it, or is there so many things you can do with it? that is a lot of fun. For the kids who like to get up and act and move around and sword fight, they can do that, right? For I always loved having my students memorize parts of Shakespeare, just like 10 lines, just because I think that's, well, memorizing any kind of poetry, I think it's just good for us. But you just never know when that's going to bubble up out of you and you're going
right.
to start reciting the prologue to Romeo and Juliet or you know, Friends, Romans, and Countrymen Lend Me Your Ears. It's just, so I think memorizing is, you know, granted, it's not something we want to beat our kids over the head with. But it is an entry point, or just the poetry. If you have a kid who loves language and loves words and wordplay, and you know, Full Fathom Five, Thy Father Lies is one of my favorite passages in The Tempest, just because I just love to say it.
it just sounds so wonderful.
It's like the St. Crispin's Day speech.
Yes.
I used to teach that with my third graders every year, and they would memorize the whole thing, and we'd act it out, and they'd get to wear costume to do it. And then we taught our kids that. I remember one time at dinner, the boys were misbehaving or something, and Andrew scolded somebody, and one of them said, "We few, we happy few, we band of brothers."
Yeah.
Like, well, then you're not mad at them anymore. But, you know, just to have those lines in your head so that they can be pulled out at when you need them.
Yeah. Or for your kids, you can have them design a set or design a costume or...
Right. Absolutely.
So
yeah. Your kids who want to control everything, you make them directors, you know, they get to move people around like pawn pieces. It's just what they want.
Now, we were talking about homeschool co-ops before we started recording, and you mentioned a homeschool co-op Shakespeare showcase.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So my friends, the Maietas, Emily and Mark Maieta, founded with a few friends in Fort Collins, the Paideia School, a classical school, a co-op. And, you know, it's grown like so many schools in the movement. It's grown and grown. And 5 years ago, we were talking about Shakespeare, and they said, what if we tried to do a Shakespeare play or some sort of performance? And I said, what if you do a Shakespeare showcase? Because that's, you know, that's how I kind of first met Shakespeare's, by acting in a showcase. So a showcase... My friend Sparky Roberts, my first director, kind of developed this. Take really good scenes. They can be from a bunch of different plays and just do them back to back. No scene is going to be more than 7 minutes. And if any scene is not terribly good, all you got to do is wait 5 or 7 minutes and you're up for the next play. And just perform a dozen scenes during the course of, you know, an evening. So we did that 5 years ago for the first time. And I think we had a dozen actors and I think we had a dozen audience members. And we just did it last weekend for the fifth time, fifth annual Shakespeare Showcase. They had 43 students. They probably had 150 members in the audience. And I remember this happens over and over and over. There was, a girl, I think she's probably 7 years old. She played one of the fairies in Midsummer Night's Dream. She didn't even have a line. She just got to wear flowers in her hair and wear a pretty dress and, you know, like do fairy stuff on stage. And after the performance, she sprints up to her friend and grabs her by the shoulders. And she said, Shakespeare is awesome. He's awesome. And you're like, oh my gosh, this little girl just fell in love with Shakespeare, you know? And the fact that we had 43 actors, it's become a thing. And the students, they love it. One other story. There's a pair of twins. I've since become friends with these families, so I'm just going to use their name. Carol and Grace. And I think Carol and Grace would not be embarrassed to let you know that the first time that they rehearsed the scene that they were going to be in 5 years ago, it was rough. It was really rough. They had not done any acting. They're not like, you know, super boisterous kids. I think they prefer to, you know, stay home most nights. Wonderful, smart girls. Wonderful, smart girls. But when I saw their first rehearsal of their scene, they're going to play the three witches, double, double, toil and trouble. I thought, oh my, we have a long way to go. They worked so hard that by the time I came back 6 weeks later, their scene was the best scene out of all of the scenes that were going to be performed. And when they performed, it was magnificent. Now, before they performed, I talked to one of them backstage as we were all kind of getting ready and said, how are you doing? And she said, I'm going to throw up. Like, I'm sure I'm going to throw up. And I was like, if you need to, it's okay. You would not be the first actor to throw up before they go on stage. It's not weird at all. It's totally normal and a little bit good to be nervous. She's like, okay. She doesn't throw up. She goes out. She gives a great performance, a great performance. And I saw her afterwards. I saw both of them afterwards. And I really mean this. They were different people after their performance. It was almost like a spiritual transformation had like taken place. They stood taller. Their shoulders were squared up. Like they had just done something that was really, really hard, but they worked at it. And not only did they work at it, but all that work paid off. They gave great performances and they've continued to give like great performances each successive year. And I really do think that this is kind of like the power of just trying to act out a Shakespeare scene. The memorization is hard. The delivery is hard. But with like, if you just work at it and you work at it enough and you trust your scene partners, you can do something really exceptional and you'll have a blast doing it. And you know you've accomplished something when you get done with that scene, like because you have had to work to make it worth its while. I'm a big believer, if you can't tell. I'm a very big believer.
So where would, two questions. First, in the Shakespeare Showcase, did you do the same scenes every year?
We mixed them up. We've done a couple of scenes that are repeats, but we've mixed them up.
And so if that's such a great way to start is to do, you know, favorite scenes from favorite plays. How many scenes is each evening? Each performance is about how many scenes?
Last weekend was 17. I think more typical would be 12, maybe even 8, depending on the size of your group.
Okay. All right. And so how would a mom who thinks that's a great idea, where do you start? Do you, you know, what's the first thing you have to do?
I'm going to put a little plug in for a website that I own called Tim Teaches Shakespeare.
Ah.
I have free 40 curated scenes. I've cut some of them down to make them very easily performable for first time people that are trying to get started with Shakespeare. So timteachesshakespeare.com. You can download any of the like PDF versions of the scenes for free. I would start, if you're a family, I would start with just one simple scene. There's a one page scene from King Lear. It's a argument between a husband and wife. And it's wonderful because it's an angry scene. And almost anybody can get angry like the first time that they're acting. It's harder to do tender scenes where you have to be like really vulnerable and people have to see you like maybe falling in love. You know, that's hard to do. But getting angry, I think boys and girls can both have a really good time with that. So I might pick a simple scene like that and read it maybe once a week, or maybe like, you know, read it at dinner once a week or twice a week or three times a week. And then just start seeing if you could start just like naturally acting it out after you just let them read it. You know, first time is going to be, I don't know what this word means. I don't know what any of this means. Second time, it's going to feel still kind of confusing. But the third time, you're going to say, oh, I think I might understand a little bit about what's going on. And the odds are you do understand what's going on. So I think that's a great place to start. Just do one scene, sitting down or standing up over the dinner table.
That's doable. Yep. Yeah.
That's doable.
That would be fun, actually.
It's really fun.
Thank you for this resource. I had no idea that was out
there. Tim Teaches Shakespeare.
Tim Teaches Shakespeare.
AllOneWord.com. And tell us about the Place the Thing podcast, which did you do the very last one or do you still have one more to record?
We have one more to record. Okay. So your son, Karen David, gosh, 5 years ago, started a kind of split off from a podcast that I was on with him called Close Reads. The split off was just Shakespeare, and he titled it The Play's the Thing. And it kind of became clear maybe a year into recording The Play's the Thing that, like, I was the Shakespeare nerd, and David loved it, but David had his hands full with so many other things. He's like, do you want to just run with this? And I said, yeah, I want to run with it. So I'm going to record in the next 2 weeks the very last of all of Shakespeare's scenes to be podcasted. We'll have done all the plays that he wrote by himself. There's a couple, maybe even three, that he co-wrote, but we are just concentrating on the ones that he wrote solo. And so The Play's the Thing goes act by act by act through all the scenes of Shakespeare. All the plays of Shakespeare. Some of the lesser plays like Troilus and Cressida, we don't go act by act. We just do a one podcast on the whole play. But that's what The Play's the Thing is about. And we've got special guests that have come on.
So you are talking about the play. This is not you performing.
That's right. That's right. That's not us performing. It's us talking about the play. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great resource, though, for so many people and teachers just listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Hey, I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Why the word dwell?
Oh, why the word dwell? So in the Psalms, I think it talks so frequently about dwelling, God dwelling with us, dwelling in the temple. And I think that it's the image of mothers at home. Dwelling is such a positive way of saying staying at home, being in the house. And it reminds us that we live with purpose and we live intentionally and we live in a place to make it beautiful, to nourish ourselves and our children. I think it's a way of indicating that we can be at home and enjoy being at home.
Mm.
I don't know. Add to that, Renee. I might be missing an image.
I can't. That was beautiful. And that really sums up what we're trying to do here is reach out and include the homeschooling moms who you and I both know we've been there. Sometimes you feel a little isolated at home with the kids, but also you are cultivating and building and growing something beautiful. I love the word dwell as well. To me, it has so much to do with home and being at home.
Yeah.
I just want to give a little shout out for your conference. All of your speakers are just terrific. The two of you, Heather Shirley, Heidi White is a really good friend. Andrea Lipinski is becoming a friend. Mm-hmm. So if you need any outsiders like recommending a conference, this would be a great one just because your speakers are top tier.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. And Tim, thank you again for taking your time to be here with us today and infecting us with your infectious love of Shakespeare. And I hope that comes across. I know it will. And I just want to encourage our listeners to not be afraid of this. If this is an area that you and your homeschool have maybe neglected a little bit, to find some ways to have fun with it, to use these resources, The Play's the Thing, and Tim's website to find a way to make Shakespeare more a part of your life. So until next time, here's to home.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.